Session number 10552, Reel 3.
Nigel Nicholson, Reel 3. Reel 3. I have read that you took a very independent line at the time, and I believe you protested, didn't you, about
Yes.
this? Could you tell me about that?
What happened was that we... I wrote a daily situation report. It was called a sitrep. And this sitrep were the events of the day which I had gathered from my visits around the battalions during the day, when I saw what was happening and talked to all the officers and so on. And, of course, information which I'd been fed from higher headquarters about the wider picture. And I used to, at the end of the day, at about 7 o'clock in the evening, I would sit down with the staff sergeant who would take from my dictation in shorthand an account of the day's events. And this was called a sitrep. And then it was run off on our mobile little printer thing. And it was taken by the dispatch riders to all the different headquarters. They had a circulation of about 100 copies. They were taken to battalion headquarters, and from there they'd send it down to platoon level. And it went on up to the division and perhaps the corps. And to neighboring units and formations. That's right, that was the circulation. And this was a regular part of the routine. I mean, the fact that it could happen shows that we weren't all that pressed. And it described day by day what was happening. And, of course, all these sitreps are preserved in the public record office. And I've got my own copies, which I've preserved as well, together with the logbook, which we kept hour by hour. And when we got this order on the 17th to send back all the Yugoslavs, I wrote at the end of that report, this order, words to this effect, are being carried out by our troops with the utmost reluctance, because we are sending to almost certain death people who trusted us and whose surrender we had accepted. Words to that effect. I can give you the exact quotation because it's in Tolstoy's book. And a copy of this reached division, you see, as it always did, and it was shown to the divisional commander, General Murray, and he sent for me next day and said, I entirely agree with what you wrote, but you should never have written it in what is, after all, a semi-public document, which will very likely leak across to the partisans. I mean, there were 100 copies, and it will leak to our own soldiers, you see, and to our headquarters. In fact, it will become general knowledge that the people who have to execute this order are protesting. This amounts to a protest against orders you have been given. And you mustn't go on doing this. And in fact, you must modify what you wrote yesterday in what you write today. And so rather, very much to my shame, I was quite pleased at having written the first one. But in the next day's sitrep, which is on the 18th, I think, 19th of May, it said we put these people on board the trains for Yugoslavia, and we have no reason to believe that they will be ill-treated when they arrive at the far end. And of course, Toby's Lowe's side of this gave me a lot of that thing, of that admission, as proof that we didn't know what their fate would be. But I'll have to explain, as I've explained to you, that I wrote it under pressure, knowing that it was false, and under orders, you see. And then I gave up writing the sitreps. I wrote that one and one more, and then I gave them up because I couldn't really bring myself to write and to circulate to people who knew the truth a false account of what was happening and of our reaction to these events. And so there aren't any more sit-reps. What there are is the logbook, which carries the story right up till the end. And the logbook is continually has remarks like another batch for the slaughterhouse, or Colonel so-and-so has discovered what his real destination is. We must segregate him from the others. Things like that, you see, which really in the most graphic and incontrovertible way possible tells the story and what we thought about it. So that's what happened. And but of course, looking back on it, I suppose that one of us should have had the courage to say, I'm not going to do this. And you can court-martial me if you wish, and for disobeying an order. But this is an order which I'm morally bound to refuse to carry out. And so when it comes to trial, Toby Lowe may have originated or elaborated some of the orders he'd received, but we carried them out. And if he is guilty of doing something immoral, so are we. And you remember that in Nuremberg, the plea, the German Nazi plea, that they were simply executing Hitler's orders, was discounted. The superior orders are no excuse for committing an act which is contrary to the Geneva and other conventions. Now, will a British jury say the same? And if Toby Lowe is condemned, I will be condemned, and so will all my brother officers be condemned. And that is why I don't look forward to the trial with much pleasure. But I am grateful that that one sentence gives me a little exculpation.
And I would perhaps add something further to that. Am I not right in thinking that since these events have happened, you have sought the truth, you have cooperated with people like...
Well, yes, I haven't written about it since the war, and of course it went to the back of my mind. I mean, 40 years have passed. I hadn't met anybody or talked about it to people and until Tolstoy's book was published, which I read. His first book, Victims of Yalta. And then I didn't know him, and I wrote to him and said, if you're thinking of doing a new edition or writing a new book, you might be interested in the fact that I have these documents. And of course, he was very interested, because I'm virtually unique in recording it hour by hour. And so we got to go over that, and I lent him the documents, and he quoted from them in Minister and the Massacres. But, and then we became friends, and 2 months ago I went to Austria with him to meet quite a number of the elderly Austrians who remember these events, and to show him the places where it all took place, the railway stations and the camps and that sort of thing. And then he's been here with his family. But I have from the very start made it clear to him that I don't support his Klagenfurt conspiracy idea involving Macmillan, and that I particularly regret that at the very end of the book, in the very last sentence of Minister and the Massacres, he suggests to Macmillan during his prime ministership, was under some sort of blackmail by the KCBG, by the Russians, who might expose Macmillan for whatever he'd done then. And I thought that that was a monstrous allegation. And of course, it was a very, very foolish one, because everybody, like Alistair Horne, like Cowgill, are fastened on this, almost to the exclusion of the rest of the story. And I further disagreed with Nikolai Tolstoy in his exoneration of Alexander. I think Alexander was careless and indifferent and allowed orders to be issued in his name without him really studying the implications, and that he should have found out. It was, after all, a major episode with Trieste. It was the central episode of the post-war months in as far as the Mediterranean armies went. And so I made it clear to him that I don't agree with him on that, and he issued an appeal for funds to fight his case. He came to need an awful lot of money, legal costs. And I'm a supporter of that fund. I'm one of the sponsors. And I asked him if, in the appeal letter, he would make it quite clear that the sponsors don't agree with everything that he alleges. I think also, you see, that it was going a bit too far to accuse Toby Aldington of being a war criminal on a level with the people we tried in Nuremberg. I think that's a bit too much. And so I had those reservations. But apart from that, I would support his account of these events through and through.
But what is your opinion of the Cowgill report?
Well, I met the Cowgill committee. I wrote them a long critique of their report, and I wrote it to Christopher Booker, who was one of the signatories. And Christopher sent it to the other three, and I met him and Cowgill himself and Lord Brimelow, I think his name was, at lunch 10 days ago, and we talked about it. And I said, well, now your purpose was to clear Macmillan's name. And they said, no. Our purpose was to get at the truth. But of course, that may be perfectly true, but the upshot was, and the way the press took it, was that it was clearing Macmillan's name. And we discussed a great deal of the detail, like was it possible, they alleged that it was impracticable to separate the non-Soviet Cossacks from the Soviet Cossacks, and screening was impossible. We went into a lot of detail like that. And at the end of this long conversation, which had been preceded by my long letter, I said, well, now in your full report, because the first thing was an interim report, are you going to deal with some of these points, some of the criticisms? And they said, I don't think we can very well. It sort of blur the impact. And I don't know what they're going to... I've written again afterward, after our meeting, and said, look here, nobody's going to read your second report if it's simply a repeat of the first report. And in any case, you owe it to yourselves and history to answer some of these things. And Nikolai's, I think, sent them another long criticism of it. They do rather pat themselves on the back for having found a lot of missing documents and that sort of thing. They found, in fact, two, one of which Nikolai gave them. And I think Tolstoy has done years of work, decades of work on this subject. He found all the witnesses who were scattered, the survivors, scattered all over the world, places like Chile and Des Moines and Iowa, and as well as in Yugoslavia still. And he's spent all these years and almost bankrupted himself in the process in following up this case. And nearly 95% of what he quotes in the documents and witnesses that Cargill quotes are in Tolstoy's book. So I think that was a little deceitful. But they did a good propaganda exercise, and the press comment upon the Cargill report was, this is one and an eye for Tolstoy, you know, and that sort of thing. But I am, as you gathered, on his side. And perhaps the Cargill report will say a little more. They said that they were simply going to reproduce more documents. Well, of course, all the documents have already been published in Tolstoy's books. I don't see much point in that.
Yes. Yeah. I gained the impression that they were also very eager to restore the reputation of the army.
Well, yes, they'd be more honest about that, if that was their other intention, because they make no bones about the feelings of the men who had to do this. And in fact, the more that they exculpate Harold Macmillan, the more they implicate the Corps headquarters. And so the army is not let off at all. And they do rather exaggerate this chaos aspect and the possible confrontation with Tito in a war, that aspect of it. But when it gets down to what happened, they don't deny that it was a terrible event, a major error. And the Foreign Office, of course, feel the same. I think the Foreign Office, way back in the 50s and 60s, a few questions were asked in Parliament, in the House of Lords particularly, about these events. And the Foreign Office line was, we didn't know what was happening, but looking back on it, it was a major error. Yes. So then, even Brimelow, who is very anti-Tolstoy personally, doesn't try to cover that up. All right?
Well, Nigel Nicholson, thank you very much indeed.
All right.
It really has been most interesting. Thank you.
Shall I shake this off?